It's a big couple of weeks in Australia at the moment, and world leaders in actual cancer prevention, treatment, control are coming to Melbourne for a major conference. And one of those people is Dr. Elizabeth Wedepas, who is director of the International Agency for Research on Cancer. It's part of the World Health Organization, although they are based in Lyon in France. And as you said earlier in the show, this is the organization that really is focused on the epidemiology, the patterns of cancer in the community, and prevention. And if you hear something like a grade one carcinogen, they're the ones who've defined it as such and therefore give information to countries around the world about cancer prevention. Elizabeth Wedepas really believes that we are underplaying cancer prevention. It needs a higher focus around the world. And as you'll hear, alcohol is one of their major concerns. It might not be what you want to hear, but you've got to stick with it because the data are quite potent. But it's an important moment for the international agency. So it's your 60th anniversary, not your anniversary, but the organization's anniversary. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Actually, it's also my 60th birthday. They coincide.
It would have been impolite for me to have even suggested anything close. So what's the biggest priority here?
The priority is to have all humankind assessing information about cancer prevention, being protected against environmental pollutants and other substances that can cause cancer. But of course, also having access to early diagnosis, screening, and treatment throughout the whole cancer journey.
What are the current estimates as to the proportion of cancer that's preventable?
Our estimates about between 30 and 50%, depending on the world's region and depending on the prevalence of risk factors in different populations. So let's say for Australia, it's most likely around 40%. That's what we know with today's technology and advancement of science. It might be higher.
So let's now flip that story in terms of cancer prevention and look at risk factors and what some people would call the population attributable risk, but really how much of the cancer burden is due to those risk factors.
In many countries, smoking still is a major cause of cancer. So it's overall worldwide about 20%, being higher in some countries and lower in others.
So 20% of all cancers, smoking
globally
plays a part.
Yeah. For obesity, the estimates vary according to the prevalence of obesity. So in some countries, let's say in the Middle East or in the Gulf countries, the prevalence of obesity is very high. So the population attributable fraction can be up to 12% of all cancer types might be attributed to obesity. In countries where obesity rates are still lower, let's say Japan, for example, then the population attributable fraction is slightly lower. Worldwide, between 4 and 8% of all cancer types can be attributed to obesity / diabetes.
Now, you've just put out a report on alcohol, and there's been some research over the last few days suggesting that people don't think of alcohol as a risk factor for cancer. So what's the population attributable risk for alcohol?
Similarly, it depends on the prevalence of alcohol drinking. Roughly worldwide, about 4 to 5%. In Europe, can be a little bit higher because people drink most in terms of per capita liters of pure alcohol per year. In France, where IARC, the organization that I work for, is based, is about 8%. So France is very high indeed. UK is also very high. In other countries, lower. Remember also that the population that drinks alcohol differs markedly in different countries. Men tend to drink more alcohol than women in most countries, but in some European countries, the proportion of men and women drinking is rather similar.
And we should just couch this conversation that we're talking about across the population rather than the risk in a particular individual.
Absolutely, yeah.
What cancers do we know are tied to alcohol?
At least 8 cancer types: mouth, larynx, stomach, esophagus, colorectal, breast, pancreas, liver, and so on. So it's a long list of cancer types. In fact, we have two additional publications, one on the potential of decreasing cancer risk if an individual drinks but stops drinking, and we found evidence of decreasing cancer risk. And also we did a third publication on which policies that could be implemented by governments that would decrease the overall drinking in the general population.
And what were those policies that could change things?
It's very similar to the policies that work for smoking. Decrease advertising or prohibit advertising altogether. Limit accessibility of alcohol retailing, for example, by time, limiting time of selling or days of selling. That limits age, can legally purchase alcohol. And price, of course. Price is a very important determinant of consumption in a population.
Which is the one we failed on. We succeeded in Australia with price on tobacco, which is probably the most significant factor driving tobacco reduction in Australia, but we failed to tax alcohol according to how much alcohol is in the drink.
Absolutely. As per today, the population is still confused, thinking that some alcohol drinking may have beneficial health impact. This is actually not the case. There is no evidence that alcohol consumption, any quantity, has beneficial effects to health. In particular, in relation to cancer, there is a very clear dose-response relationship. The more alcohol an individual consumes, alcoholic beverages, the higher of risk of several types of cancer.
Now, you have an interest in what's called early onset cancers. You've published on that. I made a Four Corners on the topic in early July, showing that at least in the Australian context, 10 different tumour types have risen over the last 20 years in relative terms. So the numbers might be small with some of them, but the rise is large and it looks like it's a generational effect. So it's a generation of younger people who are going to have higher cancer rates throughout their lives. So 10 different cancers, different causes. Colon cancer, bowel cancer leads the way, but liver cancer, pancreatic, prostate. In the American context, they think it's as many as maybe 19 different tumour types. And this must be environmental and therefore must be preventable. So there are existing risk factors, which we've just talked about. Younger people aren't drinking as much as they used to, at least in the Australian context, and yet you've got this boom in colorectal cancer. You've got cancers that can take 20 years to develop, and therefore something happened in childhood or their mother's pregnancy. And people talk about ultra-processed foods, microplastics, and fine particulate air pollution. What do we know about these relatively new risk factors that might be behind this growing epidemic of early onset cancer?
Yeah, indeed, you are totally right. And it's a phenomenon that we see with populations that are born, let's say, from the 60s onwards. And we see an increase in cancer in younger adults. By young, I mean people aged less than 50 years of age. And these increases are seen consistently across several populations worldwide. You are also absolutely right that this makes us suspect changes in lifestyle or exposures from the 60s onwards. What has changed since then? Ultra-processed food is a phenomenon that started, let's say, in the 50s with industrializations, but started really big time from the 60s onwards. For example, in the United Kingdom, 60% of the meals for most families can be ultra-processed. So it's quite extreme. Pesticides, herbicides, other pollutants in water, in soil, massive use of antibiotics. In fact, there are several groups across the world studying this, and the International Agency for Research on Cancer also has a large team of researchers dedicated to trying to understand the reasons.
So this is the human exposome study, which we also covered on the Health Report. But it took a while, and I use a while in inverted commas, for smoking to be tied to lung cancer. And even when it was convincingly tied, it still took more than a decade for tobacco control to come in because you have the industry saying, oh, well, you can't prove this. But when you've got these ubiquitous risk factors, it's actually quite hard to prove cause and effect. So how are you actually going to have a public health policy where the industry is going to say, well, prove it?
Well, the tactics that the industry uses to say that research is inconclusive or we need more data or data are contradictory. These sort of techniques are very well known and very clearly described. These are marketing techniques and they work because the population thinks that science is confusing, etc. As with these other environmental pollutants, there are scientific techniques, methodologies that we can use to disentangle risk, even though exposure is very disseminated across the population.
And then you've got to figure out how to change governments because you're in the state, South Australia, that's actually been significant in preventing volumetric taxation of alcohol, and we know about alcohol.
Absolutely. So it's the alcohol industry is very powerful. They have a very effective lobbying. So we have been trying for years to add labeling in alcoholic beverages indicating that this is a carcinogenic substance. And we have so far failed because of lobbying of alcohol industry. So it's very, very hard, first and foremost, to make the population aware, because large parts of the population are simply unaware of the risk of cancer and other diseases.
Elizabeth, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Elizabeth Widerpass is Director of the International Agency for Research on Cancer for the World Health Organization. So some interesting statistics there. Highly preventable disease, but we're probably not doing enough to get it down.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report.